Hey everyone, this is Nick Britsky at i3 Detroit. Wanted to give you an example of a couple of things that we have recorded at i3 Detroit while we work on a podcast dedicated for Signal. First thing you hear is an interview of the instructors that work with the FIRST robotics team. FIRST is a robotics competition for high school students in the U.S. And next you will hear an example of a podcast that was recorded at i3 by Bill Platt. Please check it out, and if you have any questions, shoot us a note.
And we are recording. i3detroit.com. All right. We are recording at i3 Detroit. My name is Ross Smith. I'm president of i3, and I've got some gentlemen here tonight to talk to us about all sorts of things. But first and foremost, our involvement in the FIRST robotics program here. And I've got Ted Hansen here, who can tell us a little bit about that to get us started.
Okay. I'm Ted Hansen, and I'm a member of i3 Detroit since the founding, one of the reasons that I wanted to found a hackerspace or be part of a hackerspace is I thought it would be a fantastic venue to host a FIRST robotics team. FIRST robotics is a big nationwide high school robotics competition. So these are kids between, 15 to 18 years old, still in school, and those kids are paired up with mentors who are either professional engineers or scientists or what have you, and they form teams, usually centered around a school, and they are each given a identical kit of parts to start with.
So kids all across the country participating in FIRST, then they basically get the same box of goodies as their starting point.
And yes. About 2,500 teams with probably 12 to 20 kids per team.
Yeah. Wow, okay. 2,500 teams across the U.S.?
Yeah, across
the U.S. Does that include Canada, or is this just U.S. only?
No, Canada, and they're branching out. There's some
Mexican Puerto Rican teams. There's been Mexican teams.
Wow.
There's one or two in Europe, I think.
There's a whole bunch in Israel.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
They have a Tel Aviv regional.
Yeah.
And
there are FIRST as an organization has competitions for younger kids. That there are some European Lego League teams, but the FIRST robotics competition is the high school age teams, and this is the big leagues. These are the large, most complicated robots, and these are the ones that have the involvement of professionals with them.
So can you describe something these robots might do when they're fully assembled, like a task that these kids would go to with the robot?
Well, every year there's a season to it. So every year it's a brand new game. It's all centered around this 6-week build season. So before the build season starts, you have no idea what your robot is supposed to do or what the purpose you're building it for. On kickoff day, this year is going to be January 7th?
8th.
Saturday, January 8th, there will be a big nationwide teleconference, and everyone simultaneously will learn what the brand new game is. And until that time, it's kept top secret. It's hidden away in a
several bunker. Years. It's been developed by Dave Lavery from NASA.
So he's the guy who develops the games the robots will participate in.
And he's also the mission leader for the Mars robot project.
Wow.
Yeah.
In good hands then.
Yeah, a couple of years ago when he was introducing the game, he took off his trademark Hawaiian shirt, and he had a T-shirt underneath that says, "My other car is on Mars." And that was
awesome.
Whatever that was, 3 years ago now.
Something. Yeah. I think anyone in that position would have that shirt commissioned, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just the right thing to do.
Yeah, and that's still going, too, so here's doing.
That's really cool. So is that also, is that launch party when the kids open up, like, at Christmas, do they open up that big box of parts to see all their, like, 80-20 and their aluminum and their pneumatic bits?
Well, you don't get that much. Right. You get the safety stuff, you get the battery, you get a couple example motors and a list of approved stuff to buy, but what do you say?
Oh, wow.
10 to 20% of the total robots in that kit.
You could build a. There's some amount of aluminum in there. You could build an absolutely bare bones robot with just the parts that are in the kit. You won't win. You won't necessarily do well, but you could show up and do okay.
So that's kind of like going out to camp with like a hunting knife and wiping yourself with leaves. I mean, it's possible theoretically, but it's not what most successful teams do, I take it.
Yeah, most definitely. The purpose is to have a competition where you can do something incredible. So they want teams to take every opportunity they can get. So if your team has a sponsor, has like Jet Propulsion Laboratories as a sponsor, then by all means, go use their facilities. Get all those rocket scientists. That's the purpose of the competition, is to pair up high school age kids with real professionals in science, engineering, and technology, and give them a taste of what's possible, of what's out there.
Well, that's pretty interesting.
There's a lot to be said for learning on your own just in a classroom and, you know, just with an Erector set or a Lego set or something like that, but it sort of broadens your horizons to be able to see that, wow, if I... someday I can be working with these million-dollar machines, or I could be using the wind tunnel at the GM Proving Grounds to build my robot.
It sounds like a chance to give kids a foretaste of what is out there, like you said, waiting for them, and to really work alongside professionals in this endeavor. It's not like any other classroom experience they have when they're in high school. It's pretty singular in that sense.
Yeah, we've had a chance to open a couple of kids' eyes completely to a new world and change their... what they were going to do with their lives.
Really? Wow.
Most definitely. And it happens all the time with many, many first teams. You got to think of a kid who's, sort of immersed in a sort of an entertainment culture or something like that, who maybe his parents aren't engineers or something like that. And, you know, if you just watch TV, you wouldn't think there were any other professions other than doctor, lawyer, cop, and Jersey Shore dude, what other professions could you possibly be?
So it's a very demanding profession, you know.
Well, sure, yeah.
It takes a lot of grease.
Oh, yeah, nice work if you can get it.
This is really cool, though. It sounds like one of the things a hackerspace just lives for is showing people that they can reach out and they can take ownership and they can work with their hands and make something incredible.
If you're a guy that belongs to a hackerspace, you're doing it because you love it. And that's the purpose of FIRST is to share that experience. And it is a event and an organization that is custom made for people who are crazy about the work that they do and solving problems and hacking, basically.
Right. Well, really just getting those engineers of next year and tomorrow, you know, really just with a spark, give them that motivation to pursue a very challenging field, but with great rewards too. So it sounds as though we're sponsoring one team this year, correct? Mm-hmm. I3 Detroit is sponsoring team 3306, and they're out of
3302.
3302.
The Clausen Turbo Trojans.
Mm-hmm.
Go Turbo Trojans.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we will have them. So for the whole build season, they will be here in our space building their robot, or the team will be. And when I say the team, that includes the kids and the mentors. They are equal members of the team.
Yeah, they're definitely working alongside each other, as you mentioned, and you described first to me in the past. They are meant to be colleagues on the team. It's not a top-down sort of thing. It's very lateral.
Most definitely. The biggest constraint of the whole thing is time. There's 6 weeks, and at the end of 6 weeks, there is a hard and fast deadline. It is tools down. The robot, whatever shape it's in, gets sealed up, and you don't get to touch it again until game day. So the task that's given to you, the game, the complexity of the event you're trying to build a robot for, it is more complicated. It is a bigger job than you can do in 6 weeks. I don't care who you are. You can't do it alone. And so not only do you depend on those kids to get the work done, but even with their help, you are forced to make the kind of, you know, real world engineering choices that you have to make. Do I spend more time solving this problem? Do I spend more time on my manipulator arm, or do I spend more time getting my drivetrain running?
Mm-hmm.
Do I fix this broken wheel, or do I just kind of move along with it just so I can finish my software?
Right, real world trade-offs, you know.
And there's a team every year that proves that out at the competition.
Oh, they'll, in what way?
They'll go without sponsors. They'll go without engineers, and then they'll just be a basket full of parts when the competition comes in.
That is something that intrigues me a great deal. We're very excited to be sponsoring a first team here at i3 Detroit, and it just makes me scratch my head a little. Like we're talking about, you get this box of parts to get you going, but there's also an approved parts list you can purchase above and beyond that. And, of course, there are some kids who have access to a hackerspace. There's some kids who have access to a jet propulsion lab. There's some kids who have access to none of those things. And so I'm intrigued by what the differential is, really, in what those kids are able to produce given their resources, you know? I mean, have you seen some teams do outstandingly well just on their own resources without too much sponsorship, like you're saying, Ben?
Well, so what they can do, I mean, there's always an element of the game that doesn't require much manipulation. So if they can function, there's a place for them in the game.
Can you give some examples of maybe games in the past?
All right, well, let's talk about last year. The games are, so in general, these are remote control robots. Each team builds their own robot, and then they play in a head-to-head competition. And
they're
they split them up.
On 120 pounds.
Yeah, about 120 pounds, about maybe 1 meter square. There are, you know, weight limits, size limits, a big stack of rules that you have to stay within, you know, electrical insulation, whatnot, that for safety. So there are safety rules, electrical rules, but mechanically, whatever you can design, whatever you can fabricate successfully, the sky's the limit. If you want to make a cuckoo clock, go for it. Whatever you think you can fabricate. So the game. Imagine the six robots, six teams split up into two alliances, all going head to head against each other. The field is about the size of a tennis court, and the game changes every year. So last year it was, robot soccer.
4-goal, 12-ball.
Soccer.
3-zone soccer.
Or football.
Wow.
If you'd like to call it. So yeah, goals in each corner, soccer balls out on the field. The field had two humps in the middle, two barriers that would span the width of the field. So
like giant speed bumps in a way.
Right. To go from end to end, you would have to traverse over them. And they were about...
Which you might have overlooked in the... Yeah. The complexity to go over these things was not immediately...
Yeah, not,
yeah,
not
it,
at
it
all.
Sounds
yeah.
as though that would be a big challenge to design your wheelbase so that you can go over
that
kind of
terrain. Well, you kind of just counted it. Well, at least we did at
yeah.
the beginning. Oh, we can go over that. But once we actually built one, then, holy crap, we couldn't
yeah,
get over
it was,
to save
it was
our
3 weeks into the season. Mm-hmm. It was 3 weeks into the season before we actually got around to building a model of this barrier.
So you built a model hump for your robot to drive over to simulate real-world conditions.
Sure. And then we brought the robot over and sat it next to it and looked at it, looked at the robot, looked back at the hump. Holy shit, this thing's never going to go over here. What the hell are
Ouch.
We going to do? Yeah. The game is always more complicated than you think it is. And they do that on purpose, because with 2,500 teams, if the game was simple, if there was only one solution, that wouldn't be any fun at all. So they make the game as complicated as possible to encourage all the teams to try to think of five different strategies to win.
And at the same time, there are those elements of the game, like you were saying, Ben, that are accessible for people even who can't necessarily, maybe they don't have the resources, they don't have the parts to overcome the most difficult challenges technically or from an engineering or a laboratory standpoint.
Yeah, like yeah. last year, if you were a defensive robot, you didn't need necessarily to kick or have a strong autonomous period in the beginning or
A defensive robot is kind of a box, it sounds like.
And there was teams
that... And there's always a place for that. Because remember, you're playing 3-on-3.
Hmm.
So you will have partners with you. So hopefully, in every game, you will have somebody playing...
The only downside randomly...
...with you that complements your
paired
weaknesses.
Paired with two of yourself or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like, there was robots, two-wheel drive, made out of wood with dumbbells strapped to the top that were competitive because they could push people around. And
nice.
As long as they got paired correctly, they were...
That sounds pretty resourceful. Yeah.
Strong.
Yeah.
That's
and,
very
and,
cool.
And, yeah, but they're single purpose. So if you want to win, you have to do everything well. If you're a rookie team and you just manage to make a pusher bot, just a box on wheels that only does one thing well, you could still win some games, but you're going to have difficulty getting to the top of the heap.
Let's talk a little bit about the competition structure. You've mentioned that there are six teams in one of these games. There are alliances.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a tournament-style structure where if you beat in a certain round, you move up to another level? How does the end game work after you've built your robot?
The first couple days are randomly generated seeding rounds.
It's a three-day tournament. Day one and day two.
Well, in Michigan.
No, the regionals are okay.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, so regionals are, it's a three-day tournament. Day one.
Practice.
Day two, seeding matches. So that's sort of a round robin that you get a chance to be paired with every other team that's there. You get a chance to be paired against every other team that's there. And over the day, you build up a record. These matches are only 2 minutes, 15 seconds. So you hopefully get to play a dozen matches if you don't break down, and you develop a win-loss record. Next day, in the morning, a few more seeding matches. Hopefully you fixed whatever broke overnight, come up with a strong finish. And then that afternoon, then there's a playoff. So they take the top eight teams. Those guys get to go through a process where they pick some alliance partners to partner up with them. And from then on, those alliances stick together, and they have a playoff. A double elimination?
It's semifinals, quarterfinals,
yeah.
And then finals.
So best 2 out of 3, and then, alliances get eliminated until there's one alliance left that wins the
and then if you
tournament.
Win a regional, you get to move on to nationals, which is at the
I see.
Georgia Dome,
mm-hmm.
And it's actually big enough. They have like 330 teams that come to the... At a regional, we were just speaking of, it has probably 45 teams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
But somewhere between,
at the max.
Yeah.
It's a lot of robots.
30 to 60.
And there's 330 to 350 at the nationals.
Wow.
So they'll rent the Georgia Dome and they'll rent the convention center next to it for the pits.
That's pretty awesome. Now, is this national competition? Again, I'm curious about that international aspect. You mentioned that there's a team in Tel Aviv, and there, you know, we involve teams from Canada also. Is there a different competition ladder, so to speak, in other countries, or is it really that it all sums up here in the U.S. and meets in that one?
Every regional competition sort of stands on its own, mm-hmm. and sends, so every regional stands is equal to the other and gets to send a couple, at least three teams. What
was it, chairman's winner?
Four teams, yeah.
At least four teams. There's probably 16 regionals in the
yeah.
U.S.
And some more teams get to go as well. There's you know, all the winners of all the regionals, all the, I think, runners up and no chairman's award winners, and then there's still some open slots at the
championship. Then there's a Hall of Fame. They're always allowed to come, and then
yeah,
based on your number, your team number, you're allowed in a lottery every year.
Yeah. So if you haven't been in a few years, what have you, there's some other ways to earn your way into the championship.
I see. So it's a mix of getting these kids a good amount of exposure for what this competition could offer them, right? If you have a lottery system, then you're allowing kids who may not have won their way into the competition to come in and have a chance to play. But you're also definitely encouraging and reacting to the kids who performed the best through maybe how hard they worked or the resources that they put into it.
Most definitely, yeah. And there's an overriding culture that they develop the goal is it's a
Gracious professionals.
Yeah, it's about the sort of engineering and design, the intellectual achievement, which sort of happens before you even get to the competition. They always say that the real competition is against yourself and against the clock, and that really happens during the build season. Wow. When you get to the competition, that's a party. That's sort of a celebration. That doesn't mean people don't compete. They are fierce. People are go all out to try to win, but they want to compete, and they want to show off the work that they've done. Nobody is happy when you have three experienced teams going up against two teams that broke down earlier in the day.
Right. Yeah, so, because the experienced teams, they don't get the challenge, and the inexperienced teams who broke down.
And they've, right. they've kind of weeded out slaughter by the last 6 years or so. If you win, you move on with your opponent's score.
Oh, really?
So if you beat me 60-1, yeah, you got to win, but if there's a tie down the road, you've tallied a 1. So it's advantageous to win by a narrow margin. So maybe you help the little team out, or you know you're going up against them, and you know they need to place well, so you place well, so you loan them some parts, or you send your programmer over.
Yeah,
to,
and regardless, regardless of the scoring system and the point system like that, is that they've developed a culture where everybody really wants to see a good game. So if you break down in your first game in the morning, by the time you roll your robot back to the pits, there's going to be 5-10 teams there saying, hey, we've got some tools, hey, we've got some spare parts, what do you need?
Someone's cell phone in their pocket is going off like crazy. Yep, it's you. It's okay.
We're lucky enough that we're not the team that needs the help, and we're not the team that wins every day, but we are the team that can offer some help in.
Yeah, it sounds as though we offer a very good opportunity if the kids are able to come in here and use the space. Let's talk a little more about the kids. I'm curious, are you going to see some more faces that we saw last year? Are you expecting that?
Oh, yeah, I think we'll have probably 80% re-up. We were a rookie team last year, and we had mostly freshmen and sophomores, so.
Okay.
We should see these kids for the next 3 years, the same kids.
Wow, that's great. So they're going to have really a career with FIRST and going through it a few times, hopefully, right? Hopefully they'll be able to re-enroll.
And two of our mentors this year will be students from our former teams.
Gotcha. Now, within the teams then, I take it the students do, it is supposed to be a very equal structure where the professionals and the kids work side by side, but I'm sure the kids mentor each other a little bit.
It's not structured like you think. It's okay. You run your team how you want to run your team, and we want the kids to do the work, so.
I see.
We could do this, but it wouldn't serve the same purpose.
Oh, exactly. And that was something I wondered about earlier in the conversation. There is this notion in the United States of helicopter parents, right? These are the parents who really watch their kids very carefully, and they help them do their projects, sometimes doing the projects for their kids completely so their kids don't have to get a bad grade. Anytime their kids have a poor test grade, they fight the teachers on it and say, how could you give my child a bad grade?
And we actually experienced that last year. And
yeah.
We've little background. We're coming 7-8 years with an inner-city team, and we started this new team. We sponsored two teams last year, and the inner-city team has dropped out of the competition, so we're going with Clausen, the 3302 we talked about a minute ago.
Why did the inner-city team drop out?
The administration couldn't get their stuff together.
So it was actually the school, then?
The school, yeah. The school doesn't really know what they had, so we're going to let them lose it for a year.
Oh, that's unfortunate for the kids.
But the competition will hold their number, and the kids that were on the team last year are being invited to be on this team this year.
That's very gracious.
Yes. Wow. But we've never experienced parents with the inner city team in any capacity. And last year we had, with the Clausen team, we actually learned that parents aren't, like, we've always wished for parents, but now we have too many parents.
Now you've got the opposite problem. Where
overbearing
the parents
and helicopter parents.
Overbearing, wow. So one concern, coming back to the fact that this is said in a hackerspace now, one concern a few members have voiced when we've talked about FIRST in the past is that the kids are great. The kids, they respect the tools. You know, when they're using a drill or they're using a saw, they'll respect the rules that you teach them. It's frequently the parents who are a hazard to other people because they don't understand exactly what they're getting into or they get in the kids' way. I don't know. How true is that, really?
Yeah, that's pretty true.
It's pretty accurate?
Yeah, yeah. The kids...
limited incidents, but...
Yeah.
Incidents.
For the most part, it was... No, for the most part, I got to say, it went extremely well. You don't spend this much time over 6 weeks if you don't really care about doing well and you're taking it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a joker who's going to be careless and break stuff or not give a shit, you won't be there
right
that much time.
Wow. So you actually have the opportunity. How does that work? Does the kid simply walk away from the team? Does the team expel the kid, saying, you're not contributing, you're holding us back?
We've done both, but mostly the time commitment's huge.
I see.
It's after school till 9 o'clock, 4 or 5 days a week, plus all day Saturday. So if you're not committed, you're not going to.
If you're giving up your entire Saturday, that's a big chunk of change for a kid.
It's incredible. We had kids from our older team who arranged their own carpool to show up to our shop during their spring break just so they could keep working on the robot. Yeah.
And how old are these kids? Are these like 15 and 16-year-old kids?
Yeah, not driving, not all of them. Mm-hmm. So they had to arrange a ride, had to get somebody's mom to take them, that kind of thing.
But they figured it out. They bootstrapped their way into it, and they made it work.
Most definitely, yeah, because they get hooked. You know, they
the competition's that cool, and we treat them so like peers that they want to be part of it.
When you're a kid and you meet someone like that, especially if you're not the most popular kid in school and you meet someone, you know, older than you who loves everything that you're about and wants to get you into robotics and show you that, that's a big bonding.
I'm sure people are saying it right now. I said, man, I wish I had something like that when I was in school.
I've been thinking that for this entire conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And imagine how dedicated you would have been if there was this kind of thing. How, you know, I would have crawled over broken glass to get to build a super cool robot and get, you know.
It's the idea that you would have built a super cool robot and then early on you would have gotten so much exposure to these things that are absolutely real about how engineering happens in the real world, how competition happens in the real world, because there are... You have to pick and choose your battles, and your competition is going to be basically uncompromising, but you're doing it in a setting where it's the most exhilarating thing you could be working on. Hearing you guys talk about FIRST makes me really wish it had been part of my life earlier, and we are very lucky in that we have the opportunity to make it part of so many other kids' lives by being sponsors here. Hopefully those people listening to this recording will be able to reach out to FIRST organizations perhaps locally and learn more about FIRST.
If you are a hackerspace and you don't have a FIRST robotics team, you're doing it wrong. I promise you. Every hackerspace, everyone from another hackerspace I talk to, they always say, we'd like to do some more stuff with kids, do some more educational stuff and that kind of thing. And everyone's always a little disappointed with the stuff they have going on because either it's lame. You know, it's, you know, maybe just a little, soldering class once in a while, or it's, no one can quite get the organization together. They would like to do something super cool, but who has the time to really, recruit a huge organization to make this kind of thing happen? FIRST has done all of this stuff for you. FIRST has just a huge, has all the structure that you're looking for. All the technical challenge that you want. Plus it has legitimacy of a very well respected competition, and you can get money. Real companies will give you real money, will give you thousands of dollars to do this. What other hackerspace is going to get thousands of dollars just to build a robot just because they're having fun with it?
As far as a hackerspace is concerned, that's a great way to spend time. It's fun. I'm sure the hackers learn something. And really, you're helping kids, and you're helping these kids learn that and to get that same passion. It seems absolutely worthwhile.
And it has the structure that hackerspaces always lack. You know, hackerspaces are always... herding cats, that everyone's doing their own thing, or you can never get everybody to agree on well, we want to do a cool group robot project, but what are we going to do? Well, I don't know. I want to make a robot to, you know, sweep the floor, but that's stupid. Let's do something else. And this gives you a common goal, a common focus. It gives you parts to start with. It gives you all the structure that you are looking for. It gives you rules to break. Hackers love that kind of thing, you know, this is, right. You know, or not rules to break, but rather a set of rules to game in the verb sense. That
interesting. So it's part of the winning strategy then to figure out how far you can bend things as usual, I suppose, right?
Most definitely, yeah. It is encouraged and well appreciated to solve the problem creatively. Every year at the competition, you will show up and you will see every bad idea you had.
It's the best feeling next to going to kickoff.
Yeah, it's really rewarding to show up at competition and say, oh, we had that idea.
And why'd they do that?
Yeah, oh, man, I know they're going to have trouble with this. And
can you think of an example off the top of your head, like a wheel design or a foot that you had to make for the soccer game?
We always see these robots that have, like, detachable components that can be serviced
independently. Yeah.
And we strive for that, but we always fall short based on time.
Now, is that something you think is an unnecessary luxury, or is that very important to the repair and maintenance of the robot during the competition?
Both. It all depends on execution, really. Mm-hmm. You see teams do really well with dumb ideas, like just a moving box and just brute force, and somehow they're out there winning games, and you can't believe it. And then you'll see these beautifully crafted, over-engineered million-dollar robots that just go out there and fall apart because they didn't get a chance to practice. And
interesting.
Everything.
You can generally tell when teams allowed their kids to work on the robot
definitely.
When they didn't.
I see.
And we want to be where we're at because we want to be where we're at. We want the kids to work on the robot. So,
yeah.
Is there any backlog footage of these competitions? They sound like they would be pretty interesting to watch.
Most of they are all over YouTube.
Okay.
Probably at the redzone.com.
No, the Blue Alliance.
BlueAlliance.com.
BlueAlliance.com.
TheBlueAlliance.net.
TheBlueAlliance.net.
Okay. Or look on YouTube, and the key string to look for is FRC, for First Robotics Competition.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see dozens and dozens of games from years past. Take a look at 3302. We have a few wins in there.
USFirst.org.
USFirst.org is the umbrella organization that runs First Robotics Competition, as well as the other things, the Lego League and stuff for the younger kids.
Let's touch on Lego League real briefly, and then let's wrap up. You said that this is the high school competition that we've been discussing this whole time, but there is a younger league that kids participate in.
Yeah. First, they have a plan for world domination. They really are. They say it all the time, and
they actually come out and say it.
Oh, absolutely. The purpose of FIRST is to no less than to change the culture, I think it may be in their mission statement that they want to change the culture where scientists and engineers have the same profile and respect as anyone who's in an entertainment or sports or anything like that.
It's working. You can absolutely at some schools you can receive a varsity letter on your jacket for First Robotics. So it's not just the football player that gets the glory anymore.
This is a world I wish so much I grew up in.
Yeah. And so if you, any first competition, anything like that, they get press. They get, you know, they show up, the winning team gets taken to the White House and that kind of thing. So for all these high profile press events and something like that, you will never see an athlete standing next to a first robot. You will never see an actor standing next to a first robot because they don't want them. They don't need them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's antithetical to the purpose of the whole thing.
I think that's definitely a purpose that anyone in any hackerspace could get behind to really hold high the purpose of science and the purpose of engineers and to show the world that those are phenomenal professions and ways to think and ways to be.
Yeah, they're definitely on a mission. It's one of the top five things I've ever done with my life. It's great. Go join a First Robotics team. They are out there looking for mentors. They need guys like you.
Outstanding. All right. Well, Ted and Ben, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today about First Robotics. Once again, this is Ross Smith, and we're recording at i3 Detroit. And thank you, everyone out there, for listening. And once more, that web address you should check out is theBlueAlliance.net.
Yep, or usfirst.org, or i3detroit.com.
i3detroit.com, that is also true. All right, thank you for listening.
Oh, somebody, when I first came to the site, someone said they were going to make a video game in the urinal. And you controlled the character. It was going to be like a Mario game. And you controlled the character with your stream. You had to make him jump and stuff.
That is control right there. And hopefully a very short game because...
And well, no. Here's the kicker. It will pause when no longer a stream happening. So you keep so everyone plays the same game and you keep going.
I gotta see that.
I don't know who I can't remember who said this now, but I'm like that needs to happen epically. So
that's too funny.
That would be awesome.
As my girlfriend would say, boys are silly.
The one thing I like about the Makerspace is that no one ever says why. Other places you'd be like, why would you do that? Yeah. You're just like, yes, let's make that happen.
You come in here, somebody's like, so what are you doing? Oh, I'm making a cupcake go-kart. Oh, what are you making it out of? Not why or
why?
What compelled you to do that? It's oh, really? What's going to compel it? What's going to propel it? Tell me a little bit more about it. What are you using? Are you using a fifth eighth? Blah, 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 blah. No, there's no questioning.
So,
you know, a guy walked in the other day with three boxes of cowboy hats.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what are you doing with those? And he's like, oh, I'm going to put electroluminescent wire around it and sell it at raves and stuff. I'm like, that's pretty sweet. Have you thought about selling it at MIS? Granted, being a geek, you didn't know what Michigan International Speedway was. But I told him, I said, you know, with the amount of NASCAR fans and hillbillies that are there, you'd probably make a killing with that.
Yep. So
sell it as a kit or just sell it
Yeah,
like
yeah. He's going to sell them as
kits.
Oh,
hell yeah.
So... oh yeah, I love i3. There's a hackerspace in Chicago called Pumping Station 1, and I'm going to be in Chicago. Well, I'm going to be driving through Chicago on the way to Milwaukee and the way home from Milwaukee. So I intend to stop and hang out with some of the
Shamil, Shamazo, Haas and Pepper Corporate
with the Chicago folks, and I hope to stop at the Pumping Station 1 and meet some of their folks and see their space because this is the only hackerspace I've ever been in. I've never seen any other hacker spaces.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know about this until you told me.
But apparently this is the largest or one of the largest in the country.
Sweet.
So, I mean, this is a pretty big one. But, you know. So, anyways.
So, Bill, with it being Thanksgiving, what are you thankful for, mostly?
Of the what?
What are you most thankful for right now?
That I have a job, I guess.
Yep. I have to say that. That my health is relatively good. I have a great girl that takes care of me.
Well, I don't, so...
Well, you have good health, you know. I don't know what else to say about that. I mean...
You're being all sentimental.
To each your own, you know. You know what I am really happy about and thankful for? This place.
Oh, yeah.
Because it allowed me to reconnect with some friends.
Right, right.
And, I especially in a time when... you know, you get to a point where it's like, man, all my other friends live hours away, and I really need to get out and do more stuff. And you just happen to come along and said, hey, I'm doing a radio show over at this place called i3, and you should come check it out. And I come out here, and I'm like, oh, this is bitching. You know, I'm having a blast.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get kind of bummed when it comes that we can't do anything on the Wednesdays, you know.
Yeah.
So you need to tell your boss, I can't work Wednesdays. It's a religious holiday. tell him that Tom Cruise said that you can't do it because you're a Scientologist or something.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of hard for me to, like, drive home from Wisconsin do the show and then drive back. I mean, if you got the board going somehow, I could Skype in and do it.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you saw tonight, some people were here. So if you can make sure someone's here, you set most of this up tonight except for the casting stuff. But you could probably figure out how to get that going.
Yeah.
And then you could do the show, and then I could maybe Skype in if I had a decent enough connection. So
I will have to play with it possibly this weekend over at my in-laws, because I really won't be doing much this weekend. Maybe I'll get the laptops up and running and get this one talking, and there so might be a chance.
We have a test stream you can test at. So, and I almost got the new Well, I might as well do this now. I've been meaning to get around to an official announcement, but it's still on the it's still coming up pretty soon kind of thing. It's not like an immediate thing. I am going to be totally revamping the Dementia Radio homepage, and the reason for this is that someone is making a WordPress plugin specifically designed for our RandomCast software, which is called Streaming Audio Manager. And that's basically the Streaming Audio Manager page is basically what our page is, and we've modified it heavily to suit our needs. So one of these, once I get this, so once this plugin is finished, it's about 90% done. Once this WordPress plugin is finished, I'm going to migrate the site over to WordPress, and then make that the new site. And the main reason for this is that other people can have logins and edit the fucking site themselves.
Yeah.
People are like, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, I'll give you edit permission and you can go do it now. Because I'm really good at like getting projects done and like, yes, I'm going to get this done, and I obsess on it, and I'm like, okay, it's done. And then I don't want to think about it again for a year.
And then everybody could update their own site
like,
stuff.
And it was like, but this is wrong. And I'm like, I'll get to it. And then I never get to it. So, but anyways, what was the inspiration for all that? Something about the website that we were talking about.
We were talking about being thankful, and you said you wanted, because we were talking about me casting.
But how did that relate to the website?
I have no idea, dude. This is, I am not on your little train of thought there.
We had just started moving off the you casting into something else.
I don't know.
Oh, well. So.
I don't follow half the shit you say, dude.
So, anyways.
Oh, my Lord.
If I think about that, I'll let you guys know. But anyways, so let's move on. It's time now for Geekly Weekly.
Geekly Week.
I hear you.
Oh, okay. I couldn't hear myself. Oh, there we go. In stereo.
Stereo. So, Mr. Monasti, what are you going to review tonight for your Geekly Weekly?
I am going to review some movie trailers that I happen to see.
Oh, you're reviewing music movie trailers?
Well, I'm going to review some of the movies that are coming out that I've seen. Some of them have dates and some of them don't. One of the movies that I'm really interested in seeing, and you saw the trailer for it too, Bill, is the Green Lantern.
Oh yeah.
That looked awesome.
The only problem I had with Green Lantern,
what?
I did not like the special effects they used for his powers.
Oh, with the like the fist.
It was not solid enough. It was like a big cloud of green. It's like, it's not supposed to be a big cloud of green. It's supposed to be a solid thing that you can see through, not a cloud. That's the only problem I had.
Well, if that's the only problem you have, then I think it's going to be a pretty kicking movie.
So I know they wanted to do, ooh, it's special. Let's do CGI and make it bloop, bloop, bloop.
Right.
So
that was one that looked really good. I just happened to see a commercial the other day. They're coming out with the Green Hornet. That's Batman, you retard.
No.
Okay, why are you doing Knight Rider?
Yeah, I was trying to do the Green Hornet theme song. What's the fucking Green Hornet theme song?
You know what? I've never really watched the Green Hornet. I've like read the comics and stuff like that, but I never really saw.
It's very similar to the Knight Rider. It's something like.
I don't know.
See, every time I try to, I can hear it in my mind, but every time I translate it to the real world, not Reddit comes
out. Now, hum Airwolf. I just want to make sure you can. So those are two, and I give those two a definite a 4 out of 5 Doritos on that one. Another trailer that I saw the poster of it at the theater, and I'm like, that looks interesting. Let's take a look at it. Is Aliens and Cowboys, or Cowboys and Aliens? Okay, yeah, kind of weird. It's set in Arizona, in the in the Western time. It's
got, I never got around to seeing Jonah Hex. I'm sorry,
I haven't either.
I want to see that,
but it's got Harrison Ford in it, Olivia Wilde, Daniel Craig, and from what I saw, it's weird. This guy wakes up. He's got this thing on his wrist. Looks like a for all those who play Fallout 3, looks like a Pip Boy. It's like he lost his memory for some reason or another, and I don't know. It kind of looks like a bad Siffy type thing.
Siffy.
Yeah. So that's only getting a good 2 out of 5 Doritos. And then the final one that I'm gonna do here is I saw another poster for Cars 2. And I'm like, oh man, why did they go and do that? Then I saw the trailer. It's not the same old. It's something different. It's McQueen, the main character, and Tomater, and I don't know who else is all in there, but those two are the main ones so far. And they're doing a world race. Like a world Grand Prix instead of the regular Grand Prix that he was doing before, and something with spies and stuff. But you get to see more of the car world, which is pretty cool. You know, so that'd be pretty interesting. So right now I'm going to give that a tentative 3, middle of the road there, and see what happens with that. But those are my hopefuls in the upcoming. Tangled looks kind of interesting. It's a playoff of Rapunzel from Disney. And being a big-time Disney fan that I am, I probably will end up going to see it, probably at the, when it comes to the dollar theaters or something like that, because right now I just have no time to go see some of these movies. But that's my Geekly Weekly.
Alrighty.
Over to you, Bill.
So this week I'm going to be reviewing a podcast that I have been listening to the last couple weeks. Actually, I'm all done with all the past episodes. It is called Carpool, and you watched Red Dwarf?
Oh, yeah.
The guy who plays Crichton, Robert Llewellyn, who was also on a show called Scrap Heat Challenge, yes. Which got made into Junkyard Wars here in America.
God, I love that show.
Oh, I wish they would. I'm seriously thinking about trying to find all the, because apparently they did 10 years of Scrap Heap Challenge.
Well, that's like Iron Chef. I used to watch Iron Chef when it was dubbed. Yeah. And they were doing it over in Japan.
Yeah. So I want to find all the, because they didn't play 10 years worth here in America.
Not even close.
So I want to go find all the episodes of Scrap Heap Challenge and watch them. Because, oh, I love those. Those were freaking awesome. If I3 had been around back then, I would have so fucking said, okay, guys, we're going. Let's get the three best guys. Me, who can weld?
Right.
Oh, we'd have to get Karen on it because she can weld.
Well, here's something cool. Hold on. When about five or 6 years ago, one of my best friends was getting married, and we decided to make a smoker. So okay. we took one of the or two. His father or uncle happened to own a junkyard. So we went walking through the junkyard to figure out how we were going to build this smoker. We took two fuel oil, oil, not tubes, but they're oval shaped.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They stand on their own.
Yeah, we've got a couple of those.
Yeah, we turned it on its side. Plasma cut it. Took lids, cut other pieces out to fit over it. We used. A friend of ours had a forge, so we bent tire irons to make as the mounts for the hinges. We used a bicycle handlebar for the handles.
Nice.
And we had a twin tailpipe stuck out of the back for the smoker.
Nice.
This thing held a 175-pound pig without an issue.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
So anyways, back to Carpool. So after Scrap Heat Challenge ended, Robert found himself not really doing a whole lot, and he started getting into the he tried several different various forms of new media stuff, and eventually decided to try video podcasting. So this is actually technically a video podcast.
Okay.
And what he does is he found these nice little tiny cameras that he can mount in his car. So he's got three mounted inside his car, mm-hmm. and I think two mounted outside his car. And he records them all along with you know, several mics within the car. And he gives famous people lifts. So he'll go and pick them up in his car and then take them wherever they need to go. And a lot of times, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, they need to go from the airport to the meeting or whatnot. And so obviously the first several ones he did was about this time they made those, you know, did you see those new Red Dwarfs they made about 2 years ago?
You know what? I missed a lot of the Red Dwarf stuff.
The so they made three brand new Red Dwarf episodes about 2 years ago. And so mm-hmm. when they were filming that, Robert did a bunch of the Red Dwarf crew. So he had Danny, who plays Cat, Charles, who plays Lister, and then I can't think of who played Rimmer right now, but he had the guy who played Rimmer.
Okay, Crichton was a robot.
Crichton was a robot,
I can't remember
yes.
who Crichton was.
Yeah.
Took a
oh, I love the smell of cut lumber.
I know.
It's wafting over here. I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
Hey, you could
awesome.
Throw some more of that on the fire. And
so, anyways, and then he had some of the producers. He had Rob and Doug, who were the guys who created it, and some of the other people, and it's just it's very funny because you know he's a good Robert is a very good talent to just play off of things. I mean, he was probably the perfect guy for Scrap Heat because he was interested, he was funny, and he would ask the right questions because he didn't know for sure, but he knew enough to what questions to ask.
One ugly looking fucker outside of his costume.
I don't think so, but
oh man, when I first saw him out of it, when I first saw him in Junkyard Wars,
yeah.
and I knew it was Crichton, I was like, "Holy shit, that's Crichton!" Wow, is he weird looking?
And he started up in stand up.
I could see that
as well as the girl who played Hilly and Holly, she was a stand up comic too. So he knows a lot of stand up comics. So
okay.
And then the other trifecta of this carpool is that every single episode. Except I think two takes place in a hybrid or purely electric vehicle.
Oh.
So he's very big on electric he's energy and renewable energy and blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of people that like that. One episode took place on a tractor on a real farm. And then one took place in a really big SUV, and they had to have the SUV to get back to this one place that you couldn't get by a regular car or something. Though the only two episodes I can remember that he uh-huh. did do it in a purely electrical vehicle.
You're going to have to email me all the links to all the podcasts that you've listened to so I can start.
Oh, yeah, I have a huge yeah. backlog because I listen to it. So, and you're in the same boat with me.
Yeah,
so.
I got a 4 gig nano.
Yeah.
And it's screaming for some. I still have to load quite a few episodes of Flat 29 onto my iPod so I can listen to it when I'm driving tomorrow.
Flat 29's big book of it. Sorry. probably the biggest guest.
Time once again for Flat 20 rhymes.
Time once again for another Flat 20 rhyme.
Oh, sorry. Tangent.
Probably the biggest guest that Robert has had on the show is Patrick Stewart. He managed to get Patrick Stewart
no.
on an episode of Carpool. It was awesome. And so Patrick Stewart was telling he always wanted to play not Claudius, a Shakespeare. There was a Shakespeare play where the main character is black.
Othello.
Othello. There. Thank you, Ross. In the coming in for the. The win
there. And Ross with the save.
That's what
I was thinking of it, but I was chanting
Othello.
On four different windows here.
And Patrick Stewart always wanted to play Othello, but by the time
he to get a tan.
By the time he got famous enough to be able to play a significant role like that, it was no longer culturally acceptable to do blackface.
Okay.
So he was like, I always want. So he talked to several people, and he finally found this guy who was willing to do it. They did what they called a photo negative Othello. Every black character was played by a white actor, and every white character was played by a black actor.
Interesting. I'm a dude pretending to be a dude pretending to be another
dude. And apparently it went over really well. And they didn't change a line of the script, and it went over really well.
I will have
so
to look that.
So that was a fun episode. And he's got some serious episodes where they talk about heavy into electric vehicles, and then he's got some really silly episodes where he talks to very funny people. So it's all over the place, and it was so popular.
How popular was it?
And apparently did so well that just in October it got picked up by a TV station in the UK called Dave TV as an actual legitimate TV show.
Wow.
He's still going to release all the episodes as full carpool episodes on the internet.
As long as he doesn't charge.
For free. And then the cut ones will be, edited clips will be shown on Dave TV's carpool. So it hasn't come back because they just started showing it on Dave TV, but pretty soon it'll be back with new episodes. But there's a very large back catalog of it. So I'm giving it 5 out of 5 Doritos.
Awesome.
And you can find it. You can just Google Carpool and Robert Llewellyn, or you can go to lubetube.com. That's LLEUtube.com.
Does it come with a spicy vindaloo?
I don't think they actually when he had Craig Charles on there, they talked about vindaloos, but not every episode comes with a vindaloo. So now let's move on to the DVD release schedule. Let's see, this is the 24th of November. Oh, I didn't actually hit the link here, so let's go to movie first. I didn't hit that link either. I'm just all kinds of dumbass. So okay. That is not the right, that's a movie release. Okay.
I can't find the right link.
I thought I had this all set up. I thought, I'm doing good. I'm doing awesome. Okay. So, coming out. This week, of our interest is, just Tangled. That looks to be the only thing of any interest to us. There's something called, The Legend of the Pale Male. I know nothing about it. I don't know if it's geeky or not. And then, coming out on DVD, come out yesterday of geek interest is not much. It looks pretty barren. The Beauty and the Beast on DVD. Batman Beyond. Mentioned that last week.
Okay, I just Googled Legend of the Pale Male.
Uh-huh.
Okay, here's the front of the trailer. The Legend of Pale Male, a hawk, a city, a love story. I kid you not.
It sounds like it sounds like the legend of the hawk and the goat, or the hawk and the one is a hawk by day,
Lady
and the
Hawk.
Yeah, the one's something. It sounds kind of like
one's
that.
One's a hawk. She's a hawk during the day. He's a wolf during the night.
So, this okay. Coming
and the
out,
only time they ever get to meet is during
Twilight.
Is during a solar Twilight or I think or eclipse.
Okay, cool.
I think the eclipse is when they were able to break the spell. Oh my God, I'm a geek.
I like it.
The fact that I know that.
So coming out on November 30th on DVD, The Sorcerer's Apprentice. That was actually a really good movie. Did you see it? With
No, I was thinking about The Vampire.
Yeah,
Apprentice.
Yeah. You should really. I highly encourage everyone
you know
to
what?
Watch The Sorcerer's
That's
Apprentice.
That's the one with Nick Cage, right?
Nick, the second good Nicolas Cage movie in the same year.
I will have to. What was the first one?
Kick-Ass.
I didn't see that one either.
Yes. So I highly recommend that. Vampires suck. We watch this for Blacksmith, quote-unquote, bachelor party. It's very slow. There is humor in it. It's just it's almost too much like the original and not enough humor in it, in my opinion. And Space 1999 comes out on DVD.
The series?
Yes.
So
those are...
I used to watch that all the time.
Those are your Geekly Weeklies. One last thing I want to mention. You brought up a whole bunch of... previews for movies coming up in the future, the far future.
Mm-hmm.
There's one coming out that really looks good to me called Your Highness, and that is a play on words, if you will, because one of the brothers it's a old fashioned knights and dragons tale, and one brother is all gallant and princely, and the other one is a stoner.
Thou shalt not do this. Thou art smiting thee. Hey man, just chill out and roll a doobie, dude.
Pretty much, and it also features Natalie Portman, and you get to see her butt.
Okay.
So those are your geekly weekly for this week in 2010.